Hey everyone, it's the weekend. Obviously time for another Weekender. This week I'm joined by Ben and Jerry.
Hola.
And Mr. Justin.
I'm back with a little bit of colour.
Yep. We have no Mr. Warren. I don't know why I'm cuddling to myself. He's normally sitting here, but he's off ill.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's not here today.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm actually really disappointed about that, because I wanted to tackle him on a couple of things he was talking about in last week's show.
Well, that'll be backstage content.
No. It wasn't anything too bad. But I wanted to just tell him to check his sources.
Yeah.
Well, I'll leave that for when he's back next week.
Well, if you don't know what he's talking about, it's because you're not in the Cult of Games.
No, it was on front stage he was talking about it.
Oh, was it?
It was.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because for once, I had a reason to watch The Weekender and the XLBS because I wasn't in it.
Oh, very smart.
Shocking.
The man goes to Spain.
They'll never catch
on. He misses us all, so he watched The Weekender.
Actually, it was whenever I was sitting in the airport on my way ready to come home.
Oh.
And I missed you guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Was that or go to the bar?
Well, I did that too.
Well.
You know, multitasking. You can multitask these things, Jerry. You know, you can watch and drink.
We'll hear more about that in the Cult of Games show, will we?
I've actually brought a couple of little things back for you guys from Lanzarote, but you'll have to wait till tomorrow to get them.
Tune in for the XLBS
to
see what they are. Right, first up today, fellas, it is Firelock Games Week. Just going to do a wee shout out. It's been going grand.
Mm-hmm.
People are really excited about it.
Yeah, I always love it whenever Mike and the guys come across. I really enjoyed getting to play Oak and Iron with them. I love playing Blood and Valor, and you know, Blood and Plunder is just always a good time in a can.
Yeah. And Oak and Iron's gone down a storm. Mm-hmm. People are seeming to really like the look of that rule set.
Yep.
Which is great because, like, anytime you've played it, you've enjoyed it.
Yep. It's not even anytime I've played it. It's anytime I've seen it played, just seeing how the mechanics work and just the tactics that you can use against your opponents is great. And Jerry will love it because there's no rigging.
That's all right. I get around it by not putting rigging on ships that require rigging. Rigging is here nor there when it comes to the game. That's standalone.
True enough. But we've got games out for each of them. We've got a chat with the Firelock team out this week, just updating everybody on what's happening with the games. And on the run-up to Christmas, we will have some more content running out for them.
Yeah, it's been cool. If you haven't watched the videos, go and check them out. There's an awesome prize.
Mm-hmm.
You can win that by commenting on those videos.
Yep, we have 3 core sets for Oak and Iron up for grabs. We'll be giving one away to a commenter from YouTube, one to a commenter from ontabletop.com, and one commenter from our Cult of Games members.
Yep, and if there's any video, if you've only got time for one video, go and watch the what's next, because they give away some juicy insights as to what they're working on. Like sci-fi and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I've also seen comments coming in based on, the gaming table looks real nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, actually, do you know what? If there's people out there eyeing up the gaming table, I've got a little something for you.
Listen.
If you're in the Cult of Games, you can actually go and watch us build it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the actual gaming table. Well, it's the elements of the gaming table that we've been using this time, but laid out differently. This is what we built for one of the other Blood and Plunder games. And after seeing comments of it going, that's really cool terrain, I thought, we best highlight where that is then.
Yeah, remind people how it was all made. Because honestly, this is some of the coolest terrain that you've ever come up with, Lloyd, I have to say.
Oh, it's so cool. Isn't it cool? And it's all based on the upholstery foam.
Exactly.
I remember a couple of years ago, I was looking at Sponge going, I can make something for that.
What can I do with a car sponge?
Yeah. And I had, at the time, I had seen nobody use sponge for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people have used it since, but I beat them all to the punch. You know, I put it all out there.
I'm sure Holly was probably hot dialing the phone right now to get you.
It's the Lloyd technique. Nobody realizes, but it is the Lloyd technique, despite some guy claiming he invented it in the 80s. Nah. Where are the pictures, Lloyd?
I really do want to see this done, Lloyd, but I want to see it done as winter to see how it would look like big ice flows, because I think it could look absolutely awesome.
Have we got some more pics there?
Possibly in the post here.
Yeah, that should be in the post further on down.
Step back. So we've got all the different parts here listed out for everybody.
Yep.
And then we've got some close-ups.
Look at that.
Yeah, they turned out really good.
We get to reuse some of the other terrain that's... Again, I think these are in the Cult of Games. There's videos about
how we did our...
all the jetties and things.
Yeah, and even how to do the fishnets that you can see down around here as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
absolutely. We've got to link to these. Ben, see when we're doing up the post, mate. We've got to link to this stuff.
Yeah.
We'll definitely do so, yeah.
I just loved how this one looked whenever it was done. It feels like the Caribbean.
Yeah. So if you've been enjoying Cult of Games, or what, I was going to say Cult of Games, if you've been enjoying Firelock Games Week, come on over, try the 30-day free trial of the Cult of Games. You can get in, go scroll back up so they know what they're looking for. Scroll right up to the top. This is the last episode where we've actually finished it all and pulled it all together.
Ta-da!
You'll find some posts like this. You'll find it linked down below. We'll put it in the actual post, but there's this, and then how many other parts then?
So if we scroll down, we can see there were 6 parts total.
Yep, 6 parts total.
Yep, and then there's some other links further down here.
Yeah.
To here.
I think that's the same stuff.
Same stuff? Okay.
Just laid out slightly differently. But that'll let you go from nothingness to exactly sort of what you see there, minus the actual gaming mat.
If I remember right, that's a Deep Cut Studios one.
I think so. I think it is. Anyway, good shout out there. I thought it was good content.
Yeah.
Just to remind people that it's there. Right, before we get stuck into the news, it's this phase 5 at the minute of the D-Day boot camp. But next week we're actually
the online campaign?
Yeah. The
D-Day said boot camp. Yeah. People, I'm sure there was one or two folks out there just going, what were we saying there?
The D-Day online campaign is currently in phase 5.
Yep.
But the thing is, next week we're going into the final phase. Final phase is 6.
Ooh,
starting next Tuesday.
The Germans have been holding their line a little bit better here.
No, they all start off with German hands.
Some of the locked out ones.
Yeah, that's. I think I counted up earlier. It was like 8-11 or something like that, or 8-7. They've really only held the green line particularly well. They've got Hill 112 and Cherbourg from the other two, but they've mostly been raffle stumped there. So yeah, they really need to pull their socks up on this one. If they can hold these three, they can push it to the only one behind going into the final phase. I imagine those will swing massively, though, in the next couple of days, just in the lead up to the close off of it. So it could be tight.
Well, get your games in, folks.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a German player. And once again, if you know you're a German player and you lose, cut the telephone lines to your friend's house so they can't upload their Allied battle reports. Don't just cut it, because if they cut it, you can splice it together. Cut it and take about 30 centimeters of cable with you so they can't splice that back. You need to delay them for as long as possible.
You are an evil genius.
Thank you.
What will help you is if you find someone who's digging up the street at the time.
Oh, yeah. That's ideal, really.
Get electrocuted. Yeah.
Just so they can fill it in and hide the gaps.
Yeah. The last time you had your internet cut off, it was because someone was digging up the street.
Yeah. Natural gas people cut it off. Realised they cheered it and weren't even going to say anything until the guy from BT showed up and went, have you got a cable in there that's broken? As they were filling the hole in, and they had to unfill it for him. And then they just left. So, you know.
So hang on, they left the BT guy with the hole that they dug?
Yeah, well, he just spliced the cable and then walked away, left it there. You know, people, it's very laissez-faire Arcadia feel in Northern Ireland when it comes to things like roadworks and holes in the ground. It's good.
Oh, no. I remember talking to a fella from the DOE one day. Do you know how many potholes he has to fill in a day to make his money?
3.
What?
Yeah. 3.
Hey!
And hang on. If he wants to get a Christmas bonus on the run up to Christmas, he'll fill 5.
Is that not like one shovel and a bit of pathing?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Wow.
That's how well they apparently just all the DOE boys, they work together on this to make sure they have to do the minimal amount. Like we were working on a house across the road from it, and this guy literally just took a nap.
And this is
for like 3 hours.
This is even with one of them standing around watching.
Well, this guy was out on his own, so he was hardly going to stand and watch himself. Wow. Although he may have done for a little while.
Just set a mirror up.
No. These days, surely it's a little drone.
Well, there you go. It's the same all over the world.
Oh, yeah. Deadly.
Everything's falling down.
It's when you look at Eastern Europe and go, I really, really, you know, the Romanians, they've got their shit together. I love those roads. They're great. That's how bad we are over here.
That's it. That is it. Right, yeah. So, D-Day boot camp. Not D-Day boot camp. D-Day online campaign.
There you go.
That's the one.
Moving into its final week. Next week on Tuesday, get your battle reports in. Get ready for the final pushes. Right, chappies. Time for some news. What's first, Ben?
So, first up, just a little update for this weekend is that Blood of Baal, which is the step in the Psychic Awakening series for Warhammer 40,000, will be up for pre-order. That'll allow you to get your hands on Mephiston, who we looked at last week with his little tiny nipple armor. Boop.
Ooh, yeah.
And also a little bit more of the story behind this one. So in the preview trailer that they showed off, they actually revealed that the enemy they're going up against and the other element that comes as part of this book as well as the Blood Angels, is the Tyranids, or the Tyranids, however you want to say the name. And so, yeah, we're learning exactly why the Tyranids have come to Baal and want to fight them on this sort of like blasted planet that they live on. And also some interesting new special rules for the Tyranids, who have broken away from the original sort of hive mind structure and now have their own synaptic powers within certain elements of them. So you can have things like synaptic carnifexes and things like that, which is very cool. Mm. So if you want to play around with a little bit more of an interesting alien threat, then you've got some good stuff there. And of course, if you want to play as the Blood Angels as well, you've got Mephiston leading the way for the Blood Angels there as well.
Surely this Mephiston guy can just point their, like, just poke their eyes out with his nipple armor.
Well, let's be honest, that is a very Irish chest right there. We kind of all have the tiny nipple syndrome. But I will say,
speak
anybody
for yourself, Justin.
Fine, I will.
Oh, no, wait.
I will.
Oh, he's right.
But if anybody's looking to get anything for this before it lands, I would highly recommend two novels from Black Library.
Yeah.
Number one is Dante, which basically follows the leader of the Blood Angels as he's first becoming a space marine. And the other is Devastation of Baal, which actually follows a Tyranid invasion of Baal Primus, which is their homeworld. You also get a lot of great backstory in there as to where they are within the Imperium, what's going on within the Red Scar. And yeah, it's just a really, really great read. That, and it's their first introduction to Primaris Marines. By the way, he is also now Primarist.
He
is now Primarist.
Yeah.
So he has crossed the Rubicon Primaris, as they say.
Yes. Yes. And not died.
No. Well,
I am really surprised they didn't do Dante for this. Because at the end of Devastation of Baal, he first meets the Primaris Marines. Robotic Gulliman turns up and he's just like, dude, I'm tired. I'm done with war. And Gulliman's standing there going, what? No, I still need you. Get up.
It's all about the psychic power thing going on at the moment, though. So
yeah,
that's probably why they bought them in. The other cool thing that they've done for those people that want to play games in 40K and also Kill Team as well, they've got a new chapter approved coming out for the end of the year. So collect together a whole bunch of extra bits and pieces, scenarios, points, lists, and all kinds of things like that in a chapter approved format. So you can pick that up if you want to add some extra bits and pieces to your games of 40K. And there's also the Kill Team Annual. It feels like one of those things, you know, when you go and get the annual for the Beano or something when you're a kid. But there's the Kill Team Annual, which comes with all the stuff that existed previously as part of White Dwarf Articles. It's now been collected together so you can get everything you need to start playing more stuff with Kill Team there. So they've got rules for the Sisters of the Battle and a whole bunch of extra stuff in there for scenarios and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some other bits and pieces there for those who want to play smaller games, 40K as well.
Have they split chapter approved into two separate books?
They have a book that is now entirely just for points, and then there is one for all points and points changes, and then there's another one which is for extra rules and scenarios and campaign stuff as well.
I see.
So they've made it so that you've got two different ways.
That's an interesting eyebrow right there.
Sorry, I just looked at that, and all I could think of was, why are there two books? I now understand, because one of them, they've got a list of points in it. Fair enough, yeah, okay. Alternate points values. I could do that with a biro pen and my copy of the Codex. I'll give you alternate points values.
You could do.
Mm, cool. No, I can. Can't be any worse than that.
Man, I gotta go get a Beano.
Oh, it's been years since I've had Beano.
I'm still thinking about the Beano after, because every time, like...
No, was it the Beano or the Dandy you got? Because I always got the Dandy.
I got the Dandy and Warren got the Beano.
Always got the Beano, man.
Yeah. No, see, growing up, I always got the Dandy.
It's always like that. But so Warren got the Beano, I got the Dandy.
And our American viewers are very confused.
And our grandparents would get the albums.
Could say Ireland's Own.
Like the big collections.
Aye.
But they'd always leave it in the toilet, so it would be toilet reading.
Aye.
Nice.
Oh, that's where the Dandy and the Beano always ended up in our house, was just sitting in the mag rack in the toilet.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
You might not want to learn it, but you learn it anyway.
I'm peering into Justin's brain right there. What's up next, Ben?
So next up, just a little bit of quick news that came out of Fantasy Flight Games towards the end of last week, and that is that their sort of rule designer for the game, Star Wars Legion, has designed a new skirmish format for it. Mm-hmm. So this is it's all available in PDF form, so you can go and download it and have a go with it yourself rather than have to buy a book or anything like that. It effectively makes the game, as they say in their own words, quicker and lighter. I'm sure Jerry has some opinions on that anyway, but this, we played that on a 3x3 tabletop rather than the 3x6 one that you normally play it on. And it comes down with some slimmed down options as well in the mix as well. I believe Jerry picked out that it was about 2/3 of the options that you get to play around with.
It's roughly 2/3 of the options. So a basic game of Legion is 800 points, and this rocks in at 500 points, and they've dropped command down to one, operative down to one, and normally they're 2 and 3 respectively. Mm. Your cores go from sort of maximum of 6 down to I think three or four. And then the heavies are one and the support is two. So it's roughly two-thirds of the options for two-thirds of the points, which kind of makes sense. It still gives you enough flexibility within the points value that you're not restricted massively, but at the same time, it stops people from just dropping all the AT-ATs or AT-STs or whatever they can lay their hands on all over the table. They've also included some new things like, so Legion works off a set of three types of cards. So you've got a deployment card, an objective card, and a battlefield conditions card. They've come up with four versions for this that are at the end of the rulebook, and the little skirmish rulebook is only 5 pages. Now, when I say skirmish rulebook, it's the rules for playing skirmish. It's not the rules for the game. You still need the rules for the game, but both of these are available in full online.
So you go and read the rules first, and then read this, how to cut the rules down.
How to change things.
Change it.
And to be brutally honest, if you know how to play, the only changes is army composition and then your actual games. So the 3x3 mat and the objectives, conditions, and deployments, because everything else is the same. They don't change how far your commander's radius is for activations or commands or anything else. It's just how you deploy and how you play the actual game. So it's just a different way to play.
Yeah, because there'd be people out there going looking at it going, skirmish rules. Sure, it is a skirmish game.
It is a skirmish game already, yeah.
So it's skirmish light.
It really is
lighter.
Skirmish light. Yeah, lighter.
Because I see here it's still 90 minutes to play a game. Yeah, that's what they're saying.
What really changes
up,
though,
if you want to look.
Yeah, if you want. What it's really changing up is you can run these directly out of the box. So if you pick up a core set for the factions is roughly 500 points in a box. Yeah. It's not entirely that. I mean, I think the droids are about 500 points, and the clone troopers in the new box work out closer to 700 or 800 points. So you'll actually still have to trim back some of the forces in the starter sets, but it means people can start playing a smaller variant game using the rule set and using the contents of the core box without having anything else.
About it?
Yeah, that's all there is to the rules.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's
really short.
The rules themselves, if you go to the rule book point of Fantasy Flight, is 100 pages. So that is the rules, whereas this is just, if you want to play skirmish, do this, and this, you're done.
This is a bolt on top of the main rules then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they had mentioned as well is that they'd seen a lot of people playing tournaments of Legion, and I think they wanted to try and do something that was a little bit quicker to play, and so it could be done within like a day rather than maybe spreading out over a weekend or something. Yeah. So they've tried to do this so that it feels
You mean
like
the tournament,
festive.
Not the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, a tournament of... Yeah. But yeah, it sounds like a cool way to sort of dive in and play a little bit of Star Wars Legion on a smaller scale, as Jerry was saying there. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Especially with those starter sets. So.
Yeah, especially if you're playing something like a tournament and you need people to be finished within 2 hours per game to get four games in a day, then having a variant rule set that plays in 90 minutes means you can account for people who play slower, that sort of thing. Yeah. You know, if you're trying to get the 800 point basic game in, you're going to struggle in some cases.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it took that long to play. Does a regular game really take
Depending
that long?
You're playing, it can do.
Because like you,
if
get...
you're playing a If you're playing a tournament and somebody starts to slow play you because they're losing, then yeah, it can easily, because they'll time out to get a draw.
Yeah, but that's just to do that in everything, though.
Yeah, they do, but it's harder to do in a game where it's set for 90 minutes. So if you give them 2 hours and they start to slow play, you've still got time to ruffle stomp them.
Yeah.
And
they would have to work hard to eke out more than an extra half hour of the game.
Yeah, that type of thing. So
cool. So is it always going to be just a download version and cut it out, make your own cards?
The cards at the end are set up that you just download and print them. They're not going to be doing a separate pack. In the same way, the rule set, if you want the whole rules, you print them out yourself or you use one of those terrible technological devices.
It's called a tablet.
No. It's not. It's evil. Because the rules themselves, it's essentially a living rule book. They're always adding things. So... The idea that they can go in and just tack in some extra cards whenever they want is interesting. Yeah. They've also orientated them slightly differently as well.
Yeah, that was something I did look at that was a little odd. Let me scroll down the bottom here again.
It's not so much odd as the cards are portrait rather than landscape for the main game, and that's simply to stop people confusing the two. Or if somebody starts throwing down objectives, these objectives and deployments are designed to be played on a 3x3. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has... thrown down a card of an unusual orientation, you know that they're putting the wrong card into the wrong thing. I looked at it and I went, interesting, but I'd be perfectly happy to play with some of the battlefield conditions and things just to change things up, because there's some interesting ones in there.
But at least you're aware that something's happening.
Yeah, yeah. You know you've picked up the wrong card and put it down on the table if it's facing 90 degrees different to everything else.
Rather than rocking in for a game of something and discovering that there's just one square hill in the middle of the gaming table and an ocean that comes in and washes your men away. This is what
I
see.
Still having flashbacks.
Yeah, still having flashbacks to a game at the club.
Oh, right. Where I assume we'll hear about this tomorrow.
No, I can tell about it now. So I walked in thinking, I'll have a game of Saga.
Right.
Next thing, a square hill goes down. Oh, in the middle. That's fine. Very square, very specific dimensions to this hill.
Right.
next thing I learn is, in this particular scenario, there's an ocean that comes in. And if your men aren't on the hill, they all get washed away.
Okay.
And you die.
And did your men die?
Yes, they all got washed away.
They all died.
All
did your opponent have the good grace to tell you this like a turn or two before they all died?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Or was it just as they were dying, just like, no, they all die?
No, I got the heads up.
Okay.
But it still wasn't enough to keep all of the cavalry off the hill. All the cavalry. All the horses. No men on foot, just all horses.
Oh, the grand old Duke of York, huh?
My point is, you would know that, here's something that's something up. Something different going on here.
And if you want to try some of these things in a bigger game, try them in a bigger game.
Well,
there's nothing to stop you upscaling those deployment zones or anything.
So deployment zones, I don't really mind so much, because they're more or less mini versions of the deployment zones that exist in the game already, just reduced for the 3x3. But the battlefield condition cards, war weary, for example, is a particularly nice one.
That's the one up top right here?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. I don't need to stretch my neck, but other people who may be finding their neck stiffening want to turn their heads and read that.
But you see, if they're watching us on a tablet, they can just turn it.
Benefits. When checking whether a unit is panicked, the range at which a unit can use friendly commander's courage instead of its own
is reduced from
by two.
Yeah.
Hang on.
From 2 to 1.
So there you go.
So essentially...
There you go.
There you go. See, PC better than tablet. Just that one in itself is just really interesting. The idea that you've got a unit of rebels who have just spent so much time in the dirt that they just don't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
It's just great. But yeah, anyway. So
interesting.
Legion Skirmish.
Cool.
Fun times.
Something like Steamforge coming up next, Ben.
Yeah, so God Tier, which was their game that won Kickstarter fairly recently, within recent memory, is now going to be hitting tabletops towards the sort of beginning of December. And it comes with, to begin with, two starter sets and also a bunch of additional sort of faction boxes that you can use with champions and some of their minions or followers in order to sort of bulk things out as well. So the two different starter sets are the Eternal Glade, which has you playing as Naya, the Crystal Mancer, and you can go up against Morrigan, the Lich Queen of the Frozen, and I've covered it up, Wastes, there you go. And there's also the Borderlands, which comes with Finvar, Lord of Mirages, versus Titus the Disgraced. Now, both these games come with just one champion and a bunch of followers, but the game is normally played with a few more champions on either side. I think it's like two champions on either side, maybe more than that, I can't remember exactly. But this just sort of gives you a little bit of a starting point to get stuck into the game. The actual thing with these boxes is obviously you've got the different factions in there, so there's four different factions. But then you've also got some different mats as well, which are double-sided. But all the tokens and the rules and everything else are exactly the same. So if you want to dive into these, you basically just look at which one you want, choose the faction that you want, in particular the two factions you want, and then get stuck in and start playing the game as well. On top of that, they've also got four different warband boxes, which include a champion and a bunch of their followers, as I was saying before. So you've got Blackjaw, Half Tusk, Lorsan, and Rodri. So you've got like the sort of orky guy, a little bit of like a troll giant. You've got Lorsan the elf, and then you've got Rodri the dwarf as well. And one of the key things about God Tier, if you haven't heard about it before, is that you play as these champions. The gods are all dead, and you are trying to take the shards of these dead gods and imbue them into your champions so that they can rise up and take control of the world and conquer it, which is why the heroes are always a little bit bigger than all the rest of their sort of kinsmen that are around them on the tabletop, because they've been sort of been imbued by this god energy. And the game seems pretty cool and quick and easy to play. There's a video on there that the guys at Steamforge did, which you can go and check out, which I think the game plays in about 40 minutes between sort of like two champions aside, which is pretty awesome. And if you're interested in games like, for example, Warhammer Underworlds and stuff, then this might be an interesting sort of new fantasy angle to dive into these guys and God Tier.
We actually got to see this a couple of years ago at SteamCon whenever we went across and did some coverage. I find this game really interesting because there's actually a control zone in the middle of the table, which only your champions can head into. So if you look at this, you see that sort of token set in the middle of the board here.
Yeah, the lava-looking stuff.
Yeah, as you're playing through, that actually moves and shifts and grows, so your scoring zone actually changes as you're playing through. Mm-hmm. So it's got a very organic feel to this system. And then it's only your big miniatures that can go into that and start gaining that power, so you can actually maybe block off some of your opponent's forces, depending on how you actually expand out that control zone.
I'm confused, because like I can clearly see, oh wait, are those shards? What are those things sitting that are small?
I think that's a shard in the middle there.
All right. Because you were confusing me there when you said only the big guys.
This is from whenever I was seeing it in its very early stages 2 years ago. So they may have updated the rules since then.
Why are there two? Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say one of the cool things about it actually in terms of gameplay, the kind of the points that you score each round are done on almost like a tug of war style meter. Mm-hmm. So when you score points and then the opponent scores against you, they sort of slide back towards the center. So it's all about sort of pressurizing your opponent and trying to break it back into your control. Mm-hmm. And there's like a catch up mechanic in the game as well. So after you've done your turn and stuff, the person who's behind gets to place new objective hexes on the tabletop. There's sort of like black pieces in the middle that you see that are kind of like the middle of the table. So it can kind of allow you to create more zones that you can control and then draw power from by putting down your sort of like your banner effectively.
Yeah, or blocking out your opponent.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is very, very cool.
So it's a game I'm excited for. Why are the two different flavors? I didn't quite grasp that.
It's different factions. So if you have a look on this here.
Yeah. No. Is there two box starter boxes?
Yes, there's two player starter sets with different factions. Right. So you see this one's red green.
Yeah.
So that's two factions. Yeah. And the next one is blue yellow, which is two more factions.
Mm-hmm. So same game, two different factions or four.
Yeah. And then you've got the other boxes further down, and you can see the four colors are represented again down here.
Coolio.
All three of them.
Yeah. I got it. Wanted to check.
No worries. It's a game I've been excited to see for a long time, so I'm hoping we see it in the studio soon.
Cool. What's next, Ben?
So next up, we're looking at some more larger-than-life monsters, and this is from the guys at Creature Cast, who do some absolutely stunning sculpts that will be, hopefully, something that fans of the old world and Warhammer want to pick up. And some of the cool things they showed off this week are two larger models. So the first of these is the Queen of Ruin. So she is, I think, Queen of Nurgle, if you want to tie it into the world of Warhammer Fantasy. And she is a terrifying, bloated creature that lords over the battlefield. I will point out, these miniatures are absolutely massive. So if you're going to be picking up one of these, it might be something that you want to just paint and keep on the mantelpiece, as it were, rather than actually using your games. But if you did, it will be pretty titanic. And all the miniatures that they do come with a whole bunch of alternate parts. And so you can see here with the Queen of Ruin, you've got two different kind of like flavors for her. So you've even got the option for her with sort of like a sword and helmet on. So she was maybe like a corrupted knight, for example. And then you've also got the version of her as a spellcaster, if you wanted to go down that route for your greater demon.
My God, that is hideous.
Love the flying monkey.
Love the flying monkey.
Oh, yeah, up the top.
I'm thinking this second option here is my favorite.
Yeah.
If I had to pick from the two. I like the mouth and the neck thing. So not only is there a mouth in the belly, the mouth and the neck, that's kind of freaking me out.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, Lloyd.
Let's go out to the top one.
Yeah, our top one here.
Yeah, definitely the second one. Freaks me out more.
Yeah. And the second model that they also... as well, that's coming out at the beginning of December, is on a separate story that we talked about last week in the news, and that is for the twins, which is sort of like a twisted amalgamation of two lovers that turn into a demonic spawn, as it were. And so you've got those that, if you like a little bit of maybe a little bit of Zentian stuff, maybe a bit of Slaanesh as well, you've got an option to go and pick up some stuff for them as well. They did say they're going to be doing some alternative bits and pieces for this model too, but I really like this one because I thought it was a little bit of an interesting sort of story that they're telling with the model, because obviously you've got the whole thing that they're demons and they look horrifying and terrible and that kind of thing. But I like the fact that the male in the couple has got kind of like the twisted horned helm, which kind of brings a little bit more of like a natural thing.
Yeah.
So maybe once he was like a good deity, has then been corrupted by something in the world.
He's well pleased with himself.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting vibes of Cersei and Jaime Lannister off this one.
You
vibe away. I quite like that. It's different. It's a different take on the Slaanesh-y hermaphroditic nature of desire. Whereas it's not one being; it's two that have become
melded
and intertwined.
When two become one.
Okay.
They are Please, they are Lord Lust and Lady Pride, they have been known as. So
well,
they,
yeah. that makes sense.
Gives you some cues as to how you might want to use them in your game.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were a fan. Huh?
Of?
What is it? Is it? Who is it?
What? Spice Girls?
Yes, that's it. Spice Girls. It's kind of a complete brain melt there.
I'm still not catching up on this one. I think I've blocked that one out from my childhood.
Okay, well, moving on then, Ben. Next up, mate.
So next up, we've got some stuff from the guys at Night Models. Now, you've been doing a lot of previews over on Tabletops, hopefully, showing off some of all the stuff they're doing for the third edition of the game. And one of the big things I want to talk about first, because there's two little sort of links I want to check out here. The first of these is about their massive models. Now, we've had a look at some of them before, and obviously we've seen like Batman and stuff on like the huge scenic base and that kind of thing. But one of the things I wanted to make sure that everyone knew is that in the instructions, there are rules for building them as part of those scenic spaces, but also on gaming bases as well. So these 35mm models will go on to some of the smaller bases that you can use to use them in the actual games. So you're not carting around, for example, the Bat Signal, or, you know, running around into one of Joker's theater just with the entire thing behind you. So they've tried to sort of cater the range to both collectors and those that want to use them for gaming purposes. They have said that none of the rules change between the models. And so the only reason that you would have different bases is if you wanted to try and get some benefits out of them in terms of their auras. So, for example, a lot of the different sort of commanders and champions in the game, or the leader figures, have certain auras in the game. So, for example, if you put Joker on a larger base, his aura would spread further, but he wouldn't be as maneuverable, for example, in the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's an interesting one from a gameplay perspective. I don't think I've ever really seen a company do that before, but I like the idea that they've created some smaller bases for those people that just want to get stuck in and play some proper games of Batman Miniatures Game 3rd Edition on sort of like those big crowded Gotham-style boards on the tabletop.
Sweet.
I really like them. I absolutely adore the work they've done on the Joker's sort of theater.
Let's look at that again.
Because it is straight out of the Killing Joke. Literally straight out of the Killing Joke. The unusual, I'm going to say, midget babies. You have one at the bottom and then one up here holding the arc light.
Yeah, and more at the side there.
But those weird dead bug eyes are just straight from the artwork from the Killing Joke comic book.
Cool.
So I'm a huge fan of that, as is the sort of look of the Joker in that. So we just need Batman to snap his neck at the end and we're sorted.
This leads on to, interestingly, if you want to have Batman Joker, they've also talked about the full Back to Gotham set that's going to be available. It's actually available right now. It became available on Wednesday this week, and it's going to be available, obviously, the foreseeable future in sort of pre-order terms until it comes out later this year, just in time for Christmas. And so the Back to Gotham set comes with all the rules and tokens and card that you need to play the game. There's also some amazing sort of card terrain they've done to try and give you the idea of Joker's sort of fun land and stuff from the world of Gotham and Batman. And then there's also the models for Batman, Joker, Harley Quinn, Commissioner Gordon, and then both sides have a set of sort of followers as well. So you've got the Gotham PD on one side and the Joker's goons on the other. And all the models are made out of their slightly sort of refined material they've been using, stepping away from the kind of more brittle stuff that they had in the past. And so now it's a little bit more flexible, holds a little bit more detail. And they've actually got loads of sort of alternate bits in the kits as well. So you can actually make things like the goons either up as full-on Joker goons or do them just as street thugs and stuff as well if you want to try and do something different. It's kind of cool.
And once again, that Joker fairground is from the Killing Joke.
Yeah.
The only problem is... Commissioner Gordon is in that fairground in the Killing Joke, but he's naked in a cage because the Joker kidnaps him early on.
Get sculpting.
So there's an objective for you to do yourselves at home.
I'm assuming bad things happened to Jim that day.
The whole idea of the Killing Joke is Joker's trying to prove that everybody is just, it's like the end of the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah.
Everybody is like him when you get right down to the nitty gritty, when all it needs is one bad day and all of yous are just like me. So that's where, and if that's the direction they choose to take third edition Batman Miniatures game, I love it.
Very nice. Is he buff? Is he Commissioner Gordon buff?
No, not so much.
Well, he's kind of got that 50s strongman, not strongman kind of thing going on.
Yeah, because when he's naked, because I was watching a YouTube video.
He's got a little belly. He's got a dad bod, I believe is what the kids say.
Dad bod, yeah.
And one of the guys who's doing Commissioner Gordon, I don't know, recently, he's an older guy, he's like 60-something, but he's been pumping iron.
Yeah.
As soon as he knew he was going to be Commissioner Gordon, he started pumping iron, and I sit and thinking, is Commissioner Gordon supposed to be, like, buff?
Well, I'm sure Batman ended up with pretty much a dad bod in the Justice League movies.
Yeah.
Batfleck.
I don't remember being a dad bod.
Affleck as Batman. He had a dad bod.
I do remember him doing chin-ups with about 200 kilos of chain wrapped around his legs. Yeah. And there's nothing about that, said Dad Bob. Weirdly,
a little bit thicker in the middle.
In some of the Batman stuff, Commissioner Gordon, you never really get the complete backstory about him because he comes into Gotham from outside, which is why he isn't corrupt like the rest of the police force. And there's a great one in, I want to say it's Batman Year One.
Is that the animated movie version or are you still in the comic books?
Always the comics.
Fair enough.
But yeah, he does beat one of the corrupt detectives who's, he's not commissioner at this point. So yeah. So there's a detective who he's sort of level with, who's really bad. And he, you know, you get this inner monologue from Gordon going, it's been years since I fought a Green Beret. But even so, he still needs an edge. So he tosses this ex-Green Beret corrupt detective a baseball bat and then pounds him into the dirt. So whatever his backstory is, Commissioner Gordon, he was rock hard at one stage.
Does Commissioner Gordon have a wife?
Yes.
Yes.
This is why he has a daughter.
But it was never Barbara.
No, Barbara's his daughter.
Well, Barbara, what?
Batgirl slash
the Oracle, depending on what point she gets. Yeah. Again, Killing Joke. Spoilers if you've not read the Killing Joke, but that's where she gets crippled.
I'm really confused because I've been watching Gotham, the TV series, and I think that's messed me up.
Not one to watch if you want to be on canon.
Oh, my missus enjoys it, but I was watching it going, I don't understand what the hell's going on.
I enjoy the later seasons. The early ones are a bit poo.
Canon is what canon does. I mean, the Killing Joke isn't canon because Batman kills the Joker at the end of it.
Oh, well, fair
enough. So it all depends what comic you read. So you can jump around as much as you want. But
trust me, the comic book multiverses could just blow your mind up.
I love what they've done with both the look for the starter set where they're really leaning into the comic side and they've taken the inspiration from The Killing Joke and from McFarlane's front covers for Batman, where they've gone for the really Spawn-esque sort of style that McFarlane had whenever he was drawing. But you've also got, he's in one of the other things, but we have this minion with a chainsaw who is painted and looks a lot like Joaquin Phoenix in the current Joker movie.
Yeah.
But then you've got another guy who's got the ha-ha-has all over him that looks more like the...
Jared Leto,
thank you. So they're taking their influences from the comics, from the TV series, from the films, and not just one film. They're just going, this is good, we'll use this. This is good, we'll use this. And
when do you look at Jared Leto as Joker and go, that's good?
The still image of him with Harlequin in the suits that just come from the front cover of one of the comic books.
Okay.
Which is just a standout picture.
There's another thing they're doing with a couple of their releases over this weekend, where they're actually looking at some of the stuff from, as Jerry was saying, comic books, the movies. They're doing like a Gaslight version of Batman, which is a bit more of a steampunky Victorian-esque style version of him. And they're also doing like stuff from the New 52, so there's like a Bane in a bat suit as well, which is very cool. So lots of different things if you like Gotham and DC. So
it's something Night Models always did. They always did look at the different interpretations of the different heroes, which I always quite enjoyed seeing.
Yeah, it's also interesting that DC, from a movie's perspective, has decided we're just going to embrace the darkness now.
Yeah.
And they're going to come out with R-rated movies.
Works like, for Batman perfectly.
Yeah, because we've had the Joker R-rated movie, been a great success.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're moving on with the next, what is it? It's Harley Quinn's getting her own movie.
It's Gotham Sirens, Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy, and whoever the other one is.
But they've done some reshoots for that then, I think, to R it up.
Oh, have they?
Because they probably weren't.
They do that with Suicide Squad.
Because they probably weren't originally.
It'll be Catwoman, but of course be the third of the Gotham Sirens.
Of course.
They probably weren't originally thinking, oh, this R factor is where we're going. But after the Joker, they're thinking, oh, we'll have to R these all up.
Yeah.
But
Robert
I
was going to say Robert Pattinson's going to be the new Batman. It's coming up as well.
I heard that. That could work very well. Weirdly. Because people look at him and go, he's that kid from Harry Potter, Twilight. Something?
The shiny one Twilight. Vampire.
Shiny vampire. Well, there you go then.
He's actually a really good actor.
Yeah, but since he's done those, he has stayed away from sort of tweeny films and he's been doing a lot of sort of, I'm not going to say serious because acting is at the end of the day, let's pretend, but he's been doing more adult and interesting roles rather than just leaning into the I'm a sparkly vampire thing and therefore the kids love me. So he's been quite content to do them. When Keaton was cast as Batman, everybody went, yeah, that's not going to happen. He's not going to be a good Batman. And now people go, do you remember how good Keaton was? Oh, you'll never get another Batman as good as Keaton. He was mental. Yeah. And I think Patterson could do the same thing. You can do the good-looking playboy billionaire and then at the same time also beat somebody to death with a tire iron.
See, I would love to see Jim Carrey get to revise his role as the Riddler and not do it Clooney style. No.
Oh, dear.
Jim Carrey is a great goddamn actor. If you've seen him in 23, he can do dark. Seeing him get to redo the Riddler would be fabulous if he got to do it R-rated style.
Redoing the Riddler.
What would you say?
It looks like something to look up on YouTube.
There is word that Colin Farrell is going to play the Penguin.
Oh, that could be good.
So, there we go.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah,
words fail me on that one. All I can hear is the North Dublin accent going, wah, 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 wah.
You just imagine him back in Daredevil being Bullseye?
I just imagine being Colin Farrell.
True that. Yep. Right, moving on, gents.
Aye.
What's up next, mate?
So, last week we talked a little bit about the fact that it's a golden age to be a fantasy wargamer, and that's certainly the case with the guys over at Metal King, who are doing a new edition of Relic Blade, which is their awesome and very original and unique-looking fantasy skirmish game, which is going to be coming out very, very soon. So this game has a really nice, diverse range of models kind of thing, and the new book kind of builds on all of that stuff that they learned in the first edition. Settles a lot of the rules problems and that kind of thing. It builds on the campaign nature of it, of the game as well. And it draws from a lot of inspirations that a lot of people have enjoyed in the past, like the example, like Mordheim and Frostgrave and that kind of thing as well. And it's all put together into a very nice new package. We've seen a couple of sort of sneak peeks at some of the new models as well. So you can see one of them there in render format, which is very cool. And this is one of the things I really like about Relic Blade, is that they've taken a lot of the sort of traditional fantasy stereotypes and they've done something different with them. So for example, a lot of their undead stuff is like a really nice amalgamations of bone and different ways of doing that. They've got lots of dark and very gray characters and creatures that kind of, cross the borders between good and evil. You've got your typical knights and wizards and stuff in there as well, but they've also done some stuff with the elves to try and draw a little bit more on their fey nature and that kind of like cruel element to them that you see in things like the Nordic mythology and stuff as well. This is a really cool sort of second edition of a game for a game, which I think you should go and check out in more detail. They've done a whole bunch of videos talking about what's coming up new for the second edition. And also there's a really cool series of Let's Plays from a YouTube's sort of bunch called the STF Wargaming Crew, I think it is. So you can go and check out how they learned to play the first edition of the game. And they play through some scenarios and campaigns as well, just so you can get a feel for how the narrative works. Because one of the big things that the guys behind the game wanted to do is try and present the idea of a role-playing game on the tabletop. I think it's a really cool.
I remember the STF crew came across to one of our boot camps one time.
They did, yeah. They've been over to do some stuff with us before.
It's the delightful Norwegians.
Yes.
They are, yeah.
Mm. I quite like the STF stuff as well. I like Relic Blade, although I've never had a look at the game itself, but the miniatures have always intrigued me. Mm. That's sort of style they've taken. Because they're absolutely beautiful. Mm.
Yeah, it's all very much about games played out on smaller tabletops in very much more of a narrative setting. As I say, they've really drawn on that idea of role that's behind everything. And there's even an element of that you can kind of just play the game against the sort of the creatures within the world themselves and not have to worry too much about having too many opponents to play against and stuff like that. So it's all about telling the story with play, which I think is really
nice.
Cool.
Coolio, what's next, Ben? Is there something nice coming up, Ben?
Yeah, you already know.
Is there something nice?
But I've put specific things in this episode just for you, Lot.
Oh. And
we start off with some stuff from Gripping Beast, where they have been switching over from their traditional sort of hand-sculpted method to testing out a little bit of digital sculpting.
Get rid of Ben. So. We don't need him for this. Look at that. Look at that Dark Age action.
We've seen a little bit of their work before, where we're getting a very early look at some of the stuff they've been doing, I believe it was some Norman spearmen, I think, and some sort of like regular infantry. But now they've been showing off digital work they've been doing as they build up the crossbowmen and archers, or just regular bowmen, for you to take in your Norman forces going forward. So yeah, we've got a whole bunch of the different pictures here of some of the process they've been going through and the kind of ways that you'll be able to put the models together with some of the alternative options for both hands and heads.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way they've designed these, because even though we would look at them and automatically go, saga, because we do automatically go saga. But they're taking an almost a leaf out of Vectric's book, where you don't want heads, both arms, all these bits separate. It's not all about multi-part. It's the head and the hands, and that's it. So it's about getting massed units onto the table as quickly as you can, or if you're building, you're building and producing them as quickly as you possibly can. So there's not a huge amount of variation in the way you can put things together, maybe slight twists in hands and swap the heads around. But to get units on the tabletop as quickly as you can, you're not having to do a ton of building for them, which is nice.
I am wondering, are they going to have those blocky little tabs on the bottom of those?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Are they going to be cleaned up?
No, they'll come on them blocky tabs.
Yeah, puddle bases are great.
Okay. Now, I'll read in the comments. First comments I spy is they're very static looking.
Yeah, but if it's a row of archers, I don't want them jumping and doing backflips. Yeah, this is not that terrible Robin Hood film with that guy in it whose name is stupid. This is, you know, proper people lining up and firing bows.
I know who you mean.
Yeah, he was called Aegar Targaryen, first of his name or something. He's like,
Aaron Egerton. Yeah.
So Robert and bugger off, you're wrong then, is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's very much what I'm saying. Somebody else mentioned that one of the legs looks very short on one of the archers, and all I can think is they're all based off the same human dolly.
Yeah.
So no, the legs aren't too short.
Not that image.
Because he's looking at this and going, those legs are very stumpy. But those legs are the same as those legs are the same size as that. All of the legs are the right size.
I'm guessing it's maybe just that tunic that's maybe a bit long.
I think it's the tunic that freaks people out, because I've seen this said about the Drabant.
Yeah.
Ross that I've looked at in the past as well, where people have gone, they're very stumpy looking, they're very short legs.
Yeah, the legs don't end here, people. This is what we call clothes, and the legs go up under the clothes to the hip. So these legs are the right size for legs. Yeah. Glad to be able to clear that one up for you.
So they actually have knees and stuff?
There'll be a knee about here where you can see this knee
bulge.
They're
not Warhammer dwarves.
No, it's not just a pair of boots attached to the bottoms. It's interesting to see. They also are, by the time you see this, they'll already have shown off their lovely new knights.
It's definitely the tunic, though. It's like that hoodie that you've got, Justin. You know, a big one that comes way down to your legs.
The super comfy warm one that I like, that I don't wear in public anymore because of you guys.
It's not under me.
Yeah, I'm joking.
But it freaked me out too. I was looking at Justin going, there's something wrong here. There's something weird.
He looks too long.
Yeah, looks too long or too short.
He's got a very big body and very tiny legs.
Yeah. So bring pictures back.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Do you know what I like about this, right? Because I've been doing some painting and stuff recently. Mm. We'll be talking about it in the
You're going to say the patterning
tomorrow.
On the bottom of the tunics, aren't you?
The patterning. Yeah. Because I've been painting lines and stuff around the cuffs and around the bottoms of the tunics. Not so much around the necks and things, but the fact that they've built it in, surely that's going to make painting this a bit easier, because the edge of your brush will pick it out without hitting the rest of the tunic and stuff, which should really help.
I'm seeing one little weird piece of something where there's maybe just, I don't know if it's a bit that they haven't put together right, but you see the third guy from the left there. Look at his neck. What's going on there? There's like a bar running right the way across.
That's his jewelry.
That is because these are still a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
That's why it says work in progress.
Bar coming out of his neck.
See the big words up there?
Yeah. I get that. It's just a moment of me going, wait, is that meant to be there? Or wait, no, work in progress, of course.
Yeah. Generally, square things don't exist in nature. Nobody had their head served up on a square plate. wasn't a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Let's see the next ones.
Just
keep going through it. The good thing about this is, I think...
You just want to see more of them.
Well, we chatted about this, Jerry. The only other plastic Normans that we could come up with was Conquest.
Conquest. And Conquest Conquest plastics are several years old now. And they do look at they're quite... Not even that they're static poses for Conquest. Because Conquest have... The arms are separate so you can position them. But the arms don't seem to fit accurately onto the body. They sit out from the body quite a bit, so they look like people are in unusual positions. So I don't mind the static nature, because the proportions and shape of the body look more realistic, whereas if you can glue arms on whatever way you want, then you tend to end up with things not sitting right. Shoulders,
sorry, some guy standing like that,
shoulder joints just don't exist because they've got the arm separately, so they've had to cut it flat to make you glue it onto the body, so you lose the human proportions at that point, unlike these people having long tunics where their legs are still fine. Don't worry about their legs.
Yeah, but normally I prefer a head that either has something that covers the neck, so when you stick it over you don't see misalignment, or it has like a bowl thing that you stick the neck into. Because if you miss a line, that guy's neck, it's going to stick out a mile. Yeah.
I would hope to see a ball joint on it. I don't think we're going to. You're not going to see so many, unknowingly, because the Normans were clean shaven and they had that weird pudding bowl haircut where they shaved right up the back of the head as well. It means you really can't hide it with long hair and big beards, because they didn't have either.
Yeah.
At which point, definitely, I would prefer to see a ball joint. It just means you've got more positioning for the head as well, if they had a ball socket.
So what, you want to see the neck sculpted further down, tapering into the ball?
You've got a point, because I was just thinking about from the joint, but from the positioning point of view, your head's now dictated which way it's going to look, so the two bits of the neck match.
Yes. Mm. So, but they're still a work in progress, and hopefully before they finish these off, they'll realize that they should come and ask me what to do.
One of the things I was just going to say as well is that Victrix, I know, are working away on their set of Normans to try and give you their triumvirate of Dark Age forces, because they've done Saxons and Vikings, and obviously they're going to be doing some Normans.
That's
as well.
Right. We're going to get spoiled.
So they're going to do some stuff in plastic, and hopefully that'll measure up nicely, scale and proportion wise, to what these guys are doing for Gripping Beasts. So hopefully you have some really nice options to build a quick and easy Norman force on the tabletop out of plastic.
Well, so it should do, because you would think Gripping Beast will make this match the other Viking box set in terms of
that they already have
man height and eye levels and things like that. And they've match up pretty okay with the Vitrix stuff, don't they?
Yeah, well, if you take them both at foot level, Vitrix, I think, are a little bit bigger, a little bit bulkier, but not so much so that you would notice massively if two of them were set side by side. So,
nothing you couldn't get away with if you just raised one slightly on its base and stuff, if it was bugging you.
Yeah, but just flan down the puddle a bit more on the other.
But people be all sorts of heights. Like,
well, I was about to say that. People do come in different scale. If you look here, you know, hang on. Let me fix this. There we go. So that's my skill to Jerry. And his seat is all the way down.
It's not even the height wise. The bulk of the body, sometimes if people go up to a bigger scale, the body just looks like they're giants. But no, Vitrix and Gripping Beast match fairly well. Mm-hmm. So
like people's asses.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
What?
I used to have a real juicy ass when I was at high school. It's trimmed down. I ate too much cereal. And I was perfectly normal, apart from my ass, which then just came out in this big bulge.
Pear-shaped.
So you get all shapes. It was glorious. It was so much more comfortable to sit on.
The things you...
Oh, my God.
Once again...
You were talking to me earlier about this.
Once again, you may not want to know, but now you know.
There you go.
Well,
interesting fact, if you eat a little cereal, get a big ass.
Mm.
So what? I think there's some more Dark Age stuff coming up. I think there is.
Yeah. So to get away from asses, we're looking at some more fun stuff for Lloyd to enjoy. So this is from V&V Miniatures, who are a Russian company, for a little bit of a teaser for Harald Hardrada and the Varangian Guard. They're going to be coming out from them very, very soon. So if you're looking forward to including a dashing and fine-looking Harald in your army, then you can pick up this lovely fellow alongside some of his very esteemed warriors that fought during the Dark Ages in Byzantium and such, and use them in your games. And I'm sure Lloyd will find a very good use for them in his army.
Damn right I will. Look at this.
It's the first time I've seen him as a young guardsman as well. Normally, anytime you see a model of him, it's just at the bitter end when he's the last Viking and he's generally rocking a massive beard down to his belly button, like, you know, somebody's trying to hide a badger. So it's interesting that they've decided to go, you know, young warlord or young bodyguard and rock the early years of Harald.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to this. This V&V stuff's getting far more and more tempting, because they recently came out with some, what is it, cataphracts?
Yes.
For the Byzantines. I think I popped a link or two in, Justin, because I spotted on the run order, and I was like, oh, no, we got to get a few more links dropped in here.
Give me a minute, because I'm going to have to go hunting for these, because I didn't know Lloyd had put these in.
They're in the run order. Just go to that section.
Yeah. What's more and more interesting is that there are actually a few different places now where you can order V&V from easily.
Yes, so they've definitely been increasing the output.
Mm.
There you go.
These dudes here, look at these. Click the, not that. Well, maybe that'll make him big. Definitely that next.
No. Is he wizzy? Let's get busy.
It's big-ish.
Super big.
But look at those. Oh, man. Because Hadrada, he can be, he's in the Varangian Guard. So if you go back a page, Justin.
To this one?
That guy, back as in go back to
Okay.
And go back.
Yeah.
And scroll down.
Where you want
to go. And keep going. And keep going. There you go.
Busy archers. And there's the guard themselves.
No, there you go. Click these. Look at that. So that's, he could be slotted in with them. Was he the commander? Yeah. He was the commander of Brangiangard. Yeah. So he'd have been quite young then at the time.
Yeah.
That would have been young Hadrada.
Mm. Before he went, you know what? Being a bodyguard for other people is no fun.
Even though it made him shit tons of money.
It's good to be the king. I'm going to head back up north and be the king.
Was he supposed to be the king, or did he go? He went up and kicked ass and became the king.
Mm.
Isn't that right? It wasn't like he inherited it or anything.
You know. You say he didn't inherit it. I say he had an axe. It's all the inheritance I need.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So you can rock this. There's the pagans. So it's the pagan Rus. So the good thing is, for me, the Byzantines and the pagan Rus all pretty much meld together because...
Well, they're all filth.
Yeah, because they're all filth and they all lived like bordering each other. Yeah, yeah. So you can just take the same flavors and mix them all up. So I'm getting more and more tempted to place an order for some V&V stuff.
Mm.
Damn.
Busies.
Damn. It's getting hard. It's getting hard to avoid it. Right. Moving on.
All I can think of is if you do that, I'm going to escalate with, you know, last Romans then.
And all of a sudden we're into the miniatures arms race.
It's got to be done.
All knew the risks.
A Bazzi army.
Busy wizzy. Let's get busy.
And a Vrengians. And a Russ. Because they all can all work together and fight each other. Be awesome. Right. Moving on. Kickstarters, gents.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do we look at first?
Oh. Let's look at the Dawn of Madness. Simply because I'm cuddling a box right now. I'm like that. I am like that.
Well, it's so fully funded.
Oh, I can't see it because it bends in the way.
Bulb.
Oh my goodness, it totally is.
Yeah, so the Dawn of Madness is essentially a prequel to Deep Madness that came out in Kickstarter a couple of years ago and sort of smashed everything. And it's all about gothic survival horror, so it's very much in the Call of Cthulhu feel of things. And so when they got the chance to go back, they've gone back into the same world, but started off the stories of what happened-ish, kind of, that set all the nonsense in Deep Madness off. So this is the house on the hill with the creepy experiments that are happening that are sort of breaking realities and boundaries down.
What's going on
with the jigsaw?
So I have a prototype.
Yes.
Of which there was still very much a work in progress when they sent it to us. But what you have is a game that plays out in chapters, and each of the chapters is one of the characters' stories. So you get you've got a little priest, a detective,
yeah,
a farmer and a nurse. And as you play through, these are standees in the game as currently, but we've got the prototypes that they're hoping to unlock, or they may actually have unlocked by now, the miniature versions instead of the standees. So as you're playing...
So the game can come in two flavors?
Yeah. So, I believe they're upgrading from standees to miniatures.
You can either pledge for it with just the standees, or you can upgrade and pledge for the one with the miniatures as well, if you want to. So,
So, the amount of miniatures...
Yeah, so it's all madness and death, as they say in France.
Gigantic scorpions, saw-bladed lunatics, wow.
Yeah, but the idea behind it is you're investigating what's going on, and you've got your characters like Reinhardt the detective or Catherine Little the farmer, and when you're playing the game, as you play out your story arc for these people.
Yeah.
There's not a end goal for a chapter. You play the chapter and then you see where your character has developed to, and out of the characters who are playing, you then end up with somebody will be ahead of the game essentially. And as you play each chapter, you'll get people will sort of gain more experience than others. So you're not aiming to end those chapters with a victory condition. You're just looking to find out what's happening. But whoever has advanced their character the furthest when you hit the end of the final, say, fourth chapter, that then will trigger what the final confrontation is to end that part of the campaign. So there are like four different finishes depending on which character's in the lead. So yes, you're all playing it cooperatively, together to tell the story, to work out what's going on, but one person will be slightly in the lead. And because as you develop your characters and you go through the stories, you go more and more into sort of, I think they call it malfeasance, as you sort of start to lose your mind. They are...
This is awesome. Cooperative play that I can win.
They are almost imposing their madness on the group as a whole. So you get things like... So you may meet this gentleman here, this hunchback, with a gun, dragging an empty overcoat with him. But as the madness persists throughout your story, actually what you may be seeing and what the other people in your group start to see is this more deformed guy dragging this lady by the hair with him. Or if you've completely gone off the deep end and succumbed to the madness, then maybe he's no longer a man at all. Woo-hoo. But this abomination of tentacles and flesh gone completely wrong. And the idea is, it is a gothic horror game. What they're trying to do is to tell a story that forces the characters to actually start to get tense and feel every consequence of their actions in the game itself is actually imposing their own view of the world upon everybody else in the group as they sort of play out their stories, and the levels of the madness that the characters are at and the malfeasance that they come across as these unusual creatures sort of start to impose their presence on reality changes depending on whose storyline is sort of more advanced.
Because one of the sort of elements they wanted to draw on as well is, as Jerry was saying earlier, there's like that cosmic strangeness going on, that sort of eerie nature to things. And so you've got like an element of the uncanny going through. And the idea is that the characters that you play, those sort of wanderers, their reality is being sort of ripped apart and torn in different ways. And as you say, the characters will see things in different, sort of through different lenses. And one of the neat things, you know, we were talking earlier about those puzzle pieces, they're sort of like fragments of reality, and those characters' reality that you'll be piecing back together as you go through the story and building up. So it kind of has this really nice physical element to it where you're building back up a map of that character's mind and stuff as you're going, which I think is really cool. And it will be very interesting if they manage to get their kind of horror angle right for this, because it's something that we've talked about before I think it was an XLBS, where horror is really hard to do in tabletop form. So it'd be really fascinating to see whether or not Dimension can do that. So
yeah, I don't know if they'll ever manage to get true horror, because you're not able to do the sort of the jump scares, but certainly the psychological, almost the Lovecraftian tension.
Yeah, cosmic horror.
Yeah, where you're not deliberately scaring people, or people aren't leaping out of their skin at what's happening, but the tension that's building as the stories are being played out as part of the campaign should certainly hopefully come
getting
through
sort
from
of that. Getting sort of that unsettled view is a really interesting element.
I believe we've got a load more minis right here in front of us.
There's
a lot.
The box is chock-a-block from what I can see.
Well, you can see there's the board layout there.
You've got unusual creatures, let's put it like that, and they are very much creatures of flesh, but no real distinguishable shapes, although that may just be down to how people are interpreting things. So there are some things that are very much based on the level, and you can almost see sort of the way that the nurse carrying her tools of the trade becomes more merging with the actual tools into a weirder and weirder sort of body horror, until she's no longer pushing a wheelchair and carrying whatever instrument she happens to be. She's actually becoming part of that.
Well, if you look, you can see her on screen here at the minute. So you see her in her regular form, and then just that slow devolution as that malfeasance takes over.
It's kind of got that kind of, the thing I likened it to was a little bit of sort of Dead Space, and then also a little bit of Silent Hill as well, I think.
Yeah.
So you've got that kind of really strange amalgamation of different ways. And again, playing on that uncanny in the miniatures, which I think is really cool. So,
And then the storybook. This is actually a merging of several of the storybooks. So got the Bond of the Twins. I think there's four in the actual set. These have just been printed together in one grip. But it plays out almost like a choose-your-own-adventure in part, where when you access a certain point in the building in your campaign, you'll have to go to a certain part or of the actual book, and it gives you, you know, the storyline to play along with, to read out to the group as a whole then. So you're not just playing the board game, but you are getting a very detailed narrative that goes with it. And the writing in it's quite good as well. So I like that. I like how they've sort of tailored that together.
What's in the black box?
I think they've added a whole bunch of expansions.
Yeah, there are 4 story books, I think, currently, and then additional expansions beyond that. So in the box, I haven't had a chance to go through the full rules, because when they sent the game through, unfortunately, the prototype made it to us before the rules were printed. But there's the dice, which are faction-dependent. So depending on which of the areas your character is playing, there are specific dice for them. But then there's the card decks as well. So you get to see things like frenzy decks and then Queen of Madness. So the specific decks for the specific characters, depending on what level she's at. So whether she's the level 3 or just the level 2 violent mania, or just her base Onset of Darkness at 1. And then those determine the powers and abilities she will have available to her. So you can trigger end sort of bosses depending on where you've reached in the game. Mm-hmm. So they've sent us through the entire prototype. I'm hoping to get a chance to sit down with the rule set and actually get a good run at it and see whether or not we can do a bit of a playthrough. But I don't know whether we'll get the chance between the Kickstarter finishing and now, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
But well, it does work for 1 to 4 players as well. So there's a solo element to the game, which is really cool. So if you want to dive in and do this just by yourself, you've got that aspect to it. Yeah. But then it goes all the way up to 4 as well. So.
The control boards look kind of interesting. Like if you throw one back under camera again, what are the? Any idea what the holes represent? Do you plug them with something?
Well, those are the you pick up. Energy cubes, depending on what they are now. There's 5 different, not skill sets, but characteristics. But I don't know which is which currently. Mm-hmm. So like I say, a lot of it will come down to that, fortunately, that rule book that I haven't had a chance to burrow into yet.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Now, Jerry, one thing I'm noticing here looking through here
is
it looks as if it's sometimes actually our characters who are going through this process of devolution.
Yes.
Not NPCs, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, so for example, the unusual manic nurse may be the actual...
the nurse.
Yeah, so if you're not playing the full 4-player version, or if she happens to progress her storyline in a different direction than others, then she may turn out to be what one of the other characters is looking at as far as the actual... I'm not going to say end boss, because it's not a specifically progressive campaign. It's a narrative story arc. Mm-hmm. So the final events triggered in the final chapter depends on who's got to which position. So whether or not the detective is the one that is facing everybody at the end is it. You know, it comes down to how you've played out those previous chapters of your game.
Yeah, very cool. Very, very creepy game. I'm liking the look of this.
Right.
Yeah, huge fan of Cthulhu-esque stuff anyway, so Cosmic Horror is always good fun.
Next up, something completely different.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't be any more different.
It's played on something the board.
Something completely different, and something that's right up my street. Is from the guys at Naylor Games, and this is also James Naylor, and this is Magnate the First City. So this is a game that was somewhat inspired by the idea of Monopoly, but instead of taking the terrible mechanics of Monopoly, it's taken the essence and theme of Monopoly, that is capitalism, or the horrible nature of capitalism, and puts you in the boots of property developers who are trying to set their sort of tentacles writhing into the city around you, so you can build up housing blocks, businesses, and all kinds of things like that, bringing people into your buildings, taxing them for as much money as you can, and then getting out before the housing market crashes and you end up bankrupt.
It's funny.
It sounds very, very familiar to the... So
sounds very familiar to the what, Ben?
the normal world.
It's funny you should mention property and stuff because and Monopoly. Because there's a new Millennials edition of Monopoly.
Oh God, please no.
There is. But there's no property to be bought because
what, just going around buying like Starbucks on the cover, and Levi's?
It says on the cover, no property to be bought because you can't afford it anyway.
Okay, Hasbro. That's a low blow. I'm going to accept that one.
So the cool thing about this is that this steps away from your traditional sort of new and updated modern gameplay mechanics that you will have known from other board games and stuff like that. The idea of the game is that you'll have a city center, which will be set up in the middle with City Hall and stuff like that. And then around the outside, you'll have a whole bunch of modular boards that will be put down in different ways to try and add to the replayability of it all. And then you'll go through a series of different phases where you'll be starting to buy up plots of land, build houses and businesses, roll to see if you can advertise enough to get your patrons into these houses and businesses to use them and generate money for you. And there's a little bit of a sort of element of risk and reward in this as well, because you're trying to get as much money as you can from these people without scaring them off before the market crashes at the end of the game, which sort of signals the end of it all, where you see who has accrued the most money.
Oh, this actually aims to have a crash.
We'll have a crash in this game.
The crash is the end of the game. You cannot avoid it.
Yeah. Yes.
You can mitigate your losses.
Well, it's not mitigate your losses. Your goal is to finish with the most money. So, you know, if you crash the housing market and everybody else is behind you, then you are the winner. Mm. Well done.
And Nicole,
unless I've taken all my money and bought loads of bottled water.
That might work.
I don't know. I'd probably become like a slumlord and just build all the apartment buildings in this.
You can do that. There are plenty of different sort of boards and that kind of thing. One of the things I really liked about this is the plastic buildings they've done for the game, where they actually they add to the game effect and that kind of thing. And they've got little tiny slots in the top of them where you can put your business's label in. So you've got that kind of idea of a cityscape with all the advertising boards all across it and that kind of thing, which I think is really good. For those of you that may see this a little bit more of like a brain burner, they've actually gone towards putting a tutorial game set up in the back of the manual. So when you actually get a magnet and you start using it on the tabletop, you actually play through a tutorial game first to learn all of the mechanics, so that you can dive in with everybody on the same page going forward, which I think is a really cool addition. And they've also done a solo version of the game where the game comes with AI as well, plays like another player at the table. And the really interesting thing that Naylor said about this is that it's an AI that's been built, but he doesn't really like solo games. So it works if you're missing a player as well. So if you've got like four people, but you want to add in another sort of AI version of a character into the game, you can do that as well, which I thought was really cool. A really nice sort of meaty strategy game that you
can check. So. That is cool. I like the idea because normally, like, I can sit down and play one-on-one sort of game, but I like this idea of, you know, I know what I'm doing and you know what you're doing, but we don't know what this AI deck's going to do.
Yeah, exactly. We could each be playing an AI possibly to make a four-player game out of a two-player game.
I don't know. I don't know if it breaks.
I don't know.
You'd have to play it to find out if you can do that.
It would be cool.
I'm not sure how many AI opponents you can put. It does sound like they've done so.
Well, we'll see.
It does look interesting. I like this, but then I liked Monopoly too. I liked all the arguments that started.
You see, I got really frustrated with my brother one time, and I took the money from Monopoly and threw it in the fire.
Yeah.
So we couldn't play Monopoly anymore, and they didn't have to play Monopoly anymore, and I was happy.
This is like Monopoly and SimCity had a love child.
Yeah. Mm. Because, well, you can see yourself from the buildings that it's not just houses and hotels.
It's apartments
and stuff like that. And how the city is developed, because you buy the land, you develop the land, you build whatever it is you're going to build now.
Yeah.
You can build an apartment block and be slumlord.
Yes.
If there are no retail units, office buildings for work, industrial parks nearby, residents aren't going to move into your apartments because there's nothing there.
Because we see these buildings, but scroll up.
But I'll just wait for you to buy something near one of my properties and then build my place.
Here we go.
Look, build yours.
Now, if you look at these plots, right, now scroll up again, those plots are completely different to that.
Yeah, so that's your city centre, that's your town hall, and you
so
bridge
there's
out from
zoning,
that. Yeah.
Isn't it, is there?
Well,
at least it looks a bit like it.
Yeah, so there are certain things have to go into areas to encourage other things to go into areas, so... And it's how you build your town up, or, well, how you build the city up around that to actually get it to work. And potentially, if you've built your slums and I've got my really good stuff nearby, then you could sell me your slums.
Well, here's your problem.
Because you can't sell them back and forward.
If I am the only person who owns the apartment buildings and the housing market, you're kind of forced to build your stuff in and around me at this point.
Well, no, because I could just go, I'm going to build Greendale, and Greendale will be my little, I'll take this as far away from your slums as possible and build an apartment building with all the mod cons that people need in my area.
There are only so many in the game. If I get all of them,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not going to be able to corner the market.
Yeah, there's probably going to be far.
It's something I want to try. I want to try that tactic in the game.
Yeah, well, simple. The minute you build your first apartment and it comes around to somebody else, they'll build an apartment.
Oh, maybe.
And by the time they've done three of those, you don't have three of the apartments. You know, you're at best you can do a quarter of the apartments.
Well, someone has to build. There's only so many spaces on that board.
Is it all property, as in... Scroll back down. Is it all like places to live and shops and things
so
like that?
If you look
here, any like factories and stuff
in here?
Yeah,
you've got your industrial units and your industrial parks.
Yeah.
You've then got your office buildings, small and superior, and then you've got your retail stuff as well. And then you've got small houses and your big apartment buildings.
Cool.
Yeah.
That could be a big
I was going to say, one of the cool things that really sold me on the game when I was learning a little bit more about it is that when you set up and you get to the initiative stage as you're going through the game, you actually bid to see who goes first. So there's like, and it goes back and forth. So you'll be like $100,000, and there'll be $200,000, $300,000. And it's all about putting that little bit of extra money in to see if you can go first and then make sure you haven't spent too much so that you can suddenly afford to do the rest of your turn as well. So it's all about trying to make sure you manage your finances and sort of push your luck a little bit as well.
I'm really liking the look of that game.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be for me because I love the city builders.
Yeah, yeah. You're always playing, what is it, City Skylines?
Yes, yes, and plotting out bus routes and things like this, and trains, obviously.
So they don't have the amenities and the services, no point.
That's where I, like, when I'm playing a city builder game, it's not really about the population, it's about building enough population up to screw your transit system.
Really?
Because that's when you can have the most fun. How can I move 1 million people around this city without it being all messed up?
Right.
Because then you've got your trams, and you've got your buses, and you got your trains, and you got your undergrounds.
Do you not let people have cars?
And you can have cars, but you're trying to get as many cars off the road as possible because you're just getting killed by congestion. Anyway, you've got me going off on one. Right. That brings us to the end of the show.
Yeah.
But we have winners.
We do. If you want to find out who the winners are from the Infinity Week, make sure and come across to ontabletop.com, go into the Prize Claim Center, scroll down, and they will be in there.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say, if you know one of these people that's won by looking over at the prize claim form, please let them know, because sometimes people will miss things. So please be a nice, good Samaritan and help them out.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And if you go to claim your prize, put in what it was rather than put in a message, I've won something but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and please make sure to link through to the actual video where you won something.
That's how it's done. Mm-hmm. Right, join us tomorrow for the XLBS show. We're going to talk a little bit on the blah. We're going to talk a little bit about hobby rather than me just going blah. I've got my Russ. I've been working away on that.
Yep, I have your gifts.
Oh, there's gifts. Jerry, I believe you've got some things to talk about in hobby time.
Yeah, I'm Marvelous and Roman.
Oh,
ooh,
man. Right, intriguing. Right, we'll see you there. Enjoy the XLBS tomorrow.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.